Arthur Gomez, and this is Reel 5.
I set my company up paying my wife a nice full salary each month while I was in prison camp. And she stayed in a convent where she was a teacher for the primary classes in St. Rose of Lima Convent, Macau.
Were you able to write to her?
We were able to write, but I wrote only one letter. I only had the opportunity of writing one letter of 25 words in block letters in plain language. And to tell her that I was well, and it took about 9 months for her to receive it. The highlights in the camp, what gave us animation and hope. We always believed that we would be relieved in about 3 or 4 months. So we lived every 3 months or 6 months. We heard about the Red Cross passings. And during the 38 months of captivity, we received about 3 3/4 parcels altogether. Okay. The Japanese were using our food and eating it and selling it. It was in November 1942 that we first received a Red Cross parcel. It was marked Bermondsey, England. It contained a tin of bully beef, a tin of margarine, a tin of condensed milk, a tin, when we opened it, it was a box of matches, needle, thread, pair of scissors. What the mother would do for us. It seemed like a can of food. And there was a packet of chocolate, which was kept so old for so long, it was already moldy. There was some packet of tea, a tin of fruits, dried fruits. It was a well thought of, very well planned, balanced diet parcel to help us.
And you had one each, did you, at a time?
A package, one box. But we immediately formed a group so that when we opened a tin of bully beef, we shared it 8 ways. So that we make our parcel last as long as possible. The second parcel came sometime in February next year, 43. The third parcel was in in April, very close. I remember. It was a big surprise to us. And then we had nothing until 45. And it was in March 45 when they told us to go and empty the stores and bring the stuff to Shenzhen Pool. We could see that in their headquarters, old Red Cross boxes were open, they were eating it. And the remnants we brought back, and it was only enough for 3/4 of a parcel per man. So what happened was each 4 persons received one package. So we opened the parcel and each four got three parcels. So each 4 persons got 3 parcels. What we did was we opened up the 4 parcels, put our thing out there, and everybody in rotation picked up one to share. The second highlight of our lives in the camp was the camp concerts. Everything in that camp was improvised. And of course, we had some musical instruments that were sent into the camp. Were sent in by, I believe it was by the Pope or somebody, somebody was over. And it was a great help. We formed the band, and we had some very entertaining concerts in the camp. It was innovative. We had an artist whose talents Sergeant Major Baptista, and we would call him Artista Baptista because he could paint beautiful sceneries just very quickly. And we had palm trees then, and the instruments were guitars, so we had Hawaiian tunes, and it was easy to make, but we had no uniform, no clothing, so it was easy to make the hula skirts. And we picked the slim ones and the good-looking ones to act as females. And they had to practice walking in the high heels. We took them off working party. The makeup. And really, it was an astounding thing. We had one fellow, Sonny Castro, who was really the best of the lot. And he tied his head up in the turban like in Carmen Miranda style. And he sang those Carmen Miranda songs, and he had the style with his high heels. And one day there was a big fight between him and his brother, Bobby Castro, because Bobby was singing, my brother and I, my sister and I, in that song, were brothers once. And we had a lot of humor in camp. It was good. We had Aladdin, and we had Tom Miranda, and we had skits in place, you know, to take away. Because when the Japanese saw the ladies coming and walking there, they wouldn't believe it, they wouldn't get backstage and verify it.
What did you do, Arthur? Did you take part in these?
No, I didn't take any part in that. I'm not at all talented that way. I was working in the camp office.
Were you?
Yes.
You had a job in the office?
Yes.
Well, this was apart from your manual work.
We had to go out occasionally, but not as often as the other poor blokes.
Well, did you?
We took turns going out. We had to go once or twice a week when we were out there. But others had to go every day, five or six times a week. So we went only once or twice because of the camp work. We had to do all the typing of all the roles and all the people because the Japanese keep on moving people out. At first they moved all the officers from Shumshoku camp to Argyle Street camp. That was in April, May 42. They moved all the officers out. First they moved all the Indians out of our camp to Mataway camp because they wanted to brainwash them to fight for Mother India. There was an Indian revolutionary by the name of Subhas Chandra Bose. So they took the Indians out. Then they took the officers out to Argyle Street. And then came September 1942 when they took about 1,800 prisoners out for a draft to Japan. That was the second draft to Europe, and that was the Lesbian Maroon, of which about only one half survived. They were torpedoed and there was a machine gun in the water by a Japanese soldier, and very few, only one half survived. They were battened down, really, but they were Morse coding each other, because Navy boys were, so that they knew what was happening, and they bunched together, they broke the hatches open, and as they broke the hatches open, the Japanese fired on them, but the ship was sinking. But those who could get out, got out. And that's how half was saved, survived.
Did you hear about that at the time?
No, we didn't hear anything. We didn't hear anything.
So the camp was depleted then?
The camp was depleted. At the time of the liberation, were only about 2,000 left. I'll come to that later.
When the officers left, was that bad for the camp? When the officers were taken, was that a bad thing for the organisation of the camp? Or did you cope without them?
No, we didn't miss them.
You did?
No, we did not. We did not. The Canadian officers requested to remain with the men. The officers were paid, and the Canadian officers used their money, that money, to help those of the sick who needed help. The other feature of the camp, which was most morale, was religion. Father Green, we had the Navy chaplain with the British Army Church of England chaplain. We had the Canadian chaplain, and we had the Royal Army Catholic chaplain. The Catholic chaplain was the last to come into camp. He was then the Minister of Terror, partly because of Rome and the attack in Italy. But he's the captain in the Royal Army chaplain corps, the Reverend Father John Green. He had fought in World War I because he had MM. He was a wonderful man. He was an inspiration to all of us. The Japanese allowed him to come to the camp because he could sit outside if he wanted to, because being a clergy. And when he wanted to come to the camp, they allowed him to bring all his robes in. So he had all his robes, he had the seraphim, the sacrament book, so that all the equipment was needed for a full regular religious service. We had the seraphim, for incense and everything else. And we were assigned an old building to build. He asked for it, and they gave him an old building, which again, only the roof was leaking, but there was not that. There were holes, and there were no windows or doors. But the Navy boys, they were very skillful. They found they clean up bricks and rock, they dug up earth for mortar, and they fix up everything. And they built an altar out of bricks. They built altar rails out of bricks. And you hang on a bed sheet and hang a crucifix down. It was really, to us when we entered that building, it was like entering a cathedral. The feeling was it was a place of peace of mind. And we had full religious services. And he had all the robes. And we made the holes with the electric iron, with brown rice, or some kind of flour, we never could find it. So that was one of the things in life that kept us going. And he was very severely beaten up by the Japs within an inch of his life. when the Pope had sent a large sum of money to the prisoners, and the Japanese had a wonderful idea that in the middle of July we needed a hot bath, and they wanted to use the money for building a hot bath. Paraguay refused to sign the paper and said, we need medicine, we need food, we don't need a hot bath. For saying that, he was beaten up so badly that they carried him back in the stretcher. And for his survival, we had to sacrifice part of our rice and food for him. But he survived, he was a tough man.
What was his name, Arthur?
Father Eric John Green. G-R-E-E-N. M-M. With a private in the previous name. He was a very good chess player. He was a good chess player because in the evenings I used to play chess with him.
Were there many beatings like that? Did the Japanese beat up many people?
Whenever you do not obey them, they will beat you. If you do not salute a soldier, a Japanese sentry, they will beat you. They will give you, I got a mighty wallop of a slap that sent me flying about 5 yards. Because I don't know why, but that day I was just dreaming and I didn't see why I should salute him. Well, I soon learned that I should.
You were saying earlier that the Koreans were very brutal.
Yeah.
The Koreans.
Koreans are very brutal. Particularly working parties, they were sugaring us to work all the time.
Were there any escapes?
Yes. There were several escapes from the camp. There were some successful escapes. Well, early on, the people who escaped early on were escaping was easy because we didn't have an electric fence and the Japanese were not on alert. And the junks could come right up to the pier and people could jump on the junk and go away if you had the money. And you wanted to take the risk. Could you get caught? You got shot. The Middlesex officer and some volunteers, Bozan K was one of Jardines was one of them, David Bozan K, spelled B-O-S-A-N-Q-U-E-T. He wrote the book. And he was one. We had an officer of the Middlesex Regiment. What's his name? Yeah? He wrote the book Three Men on a Beach. He escaped, and another volunteer, a medical officer. He was psychiatric, and generally, we all felt that he looks more like a patient than a doctor. But he carried a pole with him, and when some Chinese tried to capture them for ransom for money from the Japanese, he finished them without his pole. And he saved the lives of his colleagues. These escapes are really wonderful, bravery. But we paid for it because the Japanese had formed what they called a 5-horsepower scheme. Every 5 names were linked together, and if one escaped, the other 4 was taken out for questioning and beating. Well, as soon as the Japanese discovered this gate in the middle of the night, they blew the sound alarm, and we all had to go out. And on two occasions, it was under heavy pouring rain in winter, and we had to go out there and stay out there until dawn for hours. And nobody was spared. Even the sick were carried out on stretchers and put there under the rain. Many died.
So you paid the price for the people who escaped?
Yes, we paid the price. Heavy price. And of course, our rations were cut. And the extra rations of other meager extra rations that they gave to the hospital, that was also cut as punishment. Of course, what they cut from us, they keep for themselves. We had also what we call farms in the camp. We had tomato farms, we had chicken farms, and we had a pig farm. The tomato farm was the most successful because the Japanese didn't like tomatoes. And it began with somebody getting seeds out of a tin of tomatoes. And that was how they all grew, even in Stanley. And the tomatoes just grew very easily. And we used human fertilizer, waste for fertilizer. The chicken farm was quite successful until as soon as it began to produce, the Japanese began to come in with all the produce of the chicken farm, that is the eggs, went to the hospital. And the Japanese keep on coming to take away the fowls for the captain's guard commander's party or something. They come and take so many chickens away. They continue taking chickens away, but eventually we had nothing. And the same thing happened to the pig farm. They sent us food, live pigs. So we had people in camp who knew how to breed pigs. It was the general manager of the Bata Shoe Company. He came with a check. And he says, I know how to breed pigs. He was the general manager of Bata Shoe Company, but he knew how to breed pigs. And it was amazing. He bred the pigs, and they began to multiply. And we had two excellent pork meals. And it was scheduled that we could have a pork meal every week. But the Japanese decided the prisoners were having too much. They cut our rice and they took all our pigs away. So we're back to zero. We're back to plain rice again. But the funny story was that this general manager of the shoe company was taking care of the pig farm. One day his pig was sick and he came around looking for the way of curing his pig. He said, I want some Epsom salts. And somebody gave him some Epsom salts to cure his pig. And we said, well, he wanted to see how he was going to give Epsom salt to a pig. Well, he did it quite easily. He went to the place where there was a horse across there. They cut a piece of wood about 2 inches wide, and they cut a hole in the center. He got the pig out there, he tied the front trotters and pulled the pig up so that it was standing up. Then he hit this wood, he hit the snout, and the pig opened his mouth to bite and he stuck it in. Then he got his bottle of, he put it through the hole and he fed the pig. And he said, when I was a small boy, I helped my father in the pig farm. It was interesting.
How much weight did you lose, Arthur? Did you lose a lot of weight?
Yes, but we have no way of finding our weight in the camp, except by looking at our lips. And everybody's ribs were beginning to show, except those working in the cookhouse.
That must have been a coveted job, wasn't it?
Yes. Well, if you cook, there's always a surplus, and you can get the surplus. But it is a hazardous job, because every time they want to ship people to Japan to work in the coal mines, they are the people who are taken away.
Was that a worry of yours, that you might be taken to Japan?
No, it was no worry at all. Matter of fact, I entertained the thought of that if I were chosen, I'd be better off in Japan, thinking that people would be more civilized there, that there'd be food there, from what I read about prisoners of war in Europe previously, and how they lived with the British families and the farm. So I conjectured that. Little did I know that in Japan they were treated even worse. And when they were marched to camp, some Japanese woman took pity and threw bread or threw food at them. And when they were caught, if they were caught, they were beaten up by the Japanese soldiers. And some of my colleagues have made contact with the daughter of one of these ladies, and they are from a living society, and they are in contact.
Did you form very close relationships in the camp? The fact that you were all in this together,
yes.
Did you become very close? Very, you know, close relationships, very supportive. Did you help each other?
Yes. Well, one of my hobbies was to play chess with Father Green in my spare time. And the other was to study Chinese. Because in the camp we could see some Japanese papers, and we could read, try to memorize what we see, go back and tell them what was there, and those who knew figured out. That was how we found out that one of our fellows was shot. When there was an escape over the electric fence, they found a ground sheet, a rubber sheet, was thrown over the wire. The ground sheet belonged to one of the boys, and his name, we all write our name on our ground sheets. So Japanese saw that name, came and looked for him. He wouldn't talk, so he was tortured, and eventually shot. So we paid very high prices for people who escaped. We don't recognize them as heroes at all. We thought that they were extremely selfish, because they knew, like the rest of us knew, what was happening. And I don't know how they could want to do a thing like that. Because not the inherent risk that they were taking, but the harm they were doing, especially to those in the hospital when they stopped medication. That was camp life.
Did you suffer any illness yourself, Arthur? Did you get ill at all?
Fortunately, I did not get ill at all. But we had epidemics, we had cholera, we had dysentery, and worst of all, we had diphtheria. But throughout all this, we had no serum medication. we have to survive. People, those at the exterior, were told not to make any movement, but to lie perfectly still with them.